authority in the world to challenge the powers that be, to challenge the king, to call on the people of Israel and Judah to return to God, to be that voice calling on them to return. The prophet's one great concern is the religious practice of Israel. It doesn't matter who's in power or how great the economy or the world around is doing. The prophet brings one message. You have fallen away and you need to return. When Nathan stands before David, he gives a prophetic accounting of what David has done to Uriah the Hittite and his wife Bathsheba. When things are going well and then through the doors walks the prophet of God, a pall comes over the room. A wet blanket has entered. All joy gets sucked out because the prophet doesn't come when things are all good. It means drought, destruction, bad news. An accounting has happened and the prophet is there to point the finger to the king or the people at how they have been wayward, how they have violated God's law. On the simple, most basic description of the job, it means the prophet has to stand against the seat of power. Imagine, if you will, standing before the king, the most powerful person in the land, and delivering a pronouncement of how that king and the people did wrong. And the prophet never gives a sandwich of compliments to hide the bad message. It is usually delivered in the harshest and hardest of ways. There's never Nathan walking in to see David and says, "Hey, David, how are you? Nice family. Love the kids. They're really great. That one looks just like you. Absalom, the curls, the hair, really nice kid. By the way, God is mad as mad can be about the whole Uriah and Bathsheba thing. But hey, this food looks good. He doesn't do that. It's not trying to bury the bad news. There's no burying of it. The burying happens when he jams his finger in the face of the king and says, "You are the man who God has been angered by. You are the one who must give an accounting." Now, the best assessment of the role and job of the prophets really comes from Abraham Heschel. Heschel states that a prophet is a strange, one-sided, an unbearable extremist. The prophet's response to injustice is ones where few are guilty, but all bear responsibility. Hear that again. Few are guilty, but all bear responsibility. But perhaps his greatest definition of who and what a prophet does is when he writes, "The prophet is human, yet he employs notes one octave too high for our ears. He or she experiences moments that defy our understanding. He is neither a singing saint or a moralizing poet, but an assaulter on the mind. Often his or her words begin to burn where the conscience ends." The prophet is an iconoclast challenging the apparently holy, revered, and awesome beliefs cherished as certainties, institutions endowed with supreme sanctity. He exposes these as scandalous pretensions. Now, this week I had a bit of a learning moment in Bible study. As we were talking about Elijah and Elisha, and the role of prophet, I mentioned that quote. And in my tone deafness, the fact that I haven't been able to sing in a choir without being asked to politely not sing since I was about 13, I missed out on perhaps one thing that Heschel notes that we don't notice. And thank you, Wayne, for pointing this out. When a prophet cries out in one octave too high, the hearer of the prophet is destroyed. But it also destroys the prophet. It destroys the prophet because the human larynx, the voice box, is not designed to do that. And so as you understand a prophet, you must also understand the burden of a prophet. And you can't understand Elijah in this moment unless you understand the burden he has borne and what he has done. When we hear the words of the prophets as they deliver their message to Israel, Judah, and the kings, we hear them. We might squirm in our seats a little bit as we find and hear bits of ourselves in their message, in their words that assault our ears. But we forget the damage that is done to the prophet in delivering this message. The reality is that they are called on by God to express the message of dismay, disgust, and frustration that God has. People aren't going to blame or make physical or mental and emotional attacks on God. They will assault physically, mentally, verbally the prophet. There's a reason why Jeremiah is called the suffering prophet. The king throws him in jail, throws him in the pit, takes his prophecy and burns it in fire. A prophet is not a welcome person in most circles. They're a lightning rod. When bad news happens, which God is writing punishment on Israel, it's the prophet that catches the blame. Can we really fully imagine and understand the weight and burden carried by a prophet? The struggle of Elijah is that he is battling to drag Israel, tooth and nail, fighting, screaming, and kicking like a kid in the toy aisle at the store. Just fighting and fighting to try and get him out, trying to drag Israel into faithful following of God. His job is not made any easier by the king who he has to challenge. When Nathan stands in front of David, he is greeted by a welcoming person who truly wishes to do what is good in God's eyes. But when Elijah goes to Ahab, Ahab, son of Omri, who did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. And there were some real doozies before him. This is the guy, this worst king since other kings, that Elijah has to drag back. There's a familiar quote. Simply put, we all have a breaking point. And when we see Elijah here, it's obvious that he has hit his. He cannot carry the burden of being God's prophet much longer. He's harried and chased by the queen, wanting to execute him. There's a price on his head. He's burned so brightly against the powers that be until he can't burn anymore. And so what does he do? He goes into the wilderness and sits under a tree. But what comes is not his end, but this almost beautiful moment of meeting him where he is, picking him up, lifting him up. The king and queen, yes, are ready to eliminate the fly that's been buzzing around them. And instead of giving Elijah what he wants. God gives him exactly what he needs. When we see Elijah, he isn't the pillar of strength. He isn't much of a force to be reckoned with. He is broken and beaten. His prophetic flame is burning out, and he wishes to die. But instead of the long, solemn music, God gives him food for the journey and rest when he needs it. The angel comes and tells him to eat and drink, and then he sleeps. And then he's woken up again, and he eats and drinks again, and then goes 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness. Not with the queen harrying him, not with another prophetic vision to be delivered to Israel, but with 40 days and 40 nights headed towards the mountain of God. It's not a whole lot that's given to him. When he insists, instead of an end to his world, his ministry, he's given a meeting with the chairman of the board and a listening ear. Is this the end of his ministry? Yeah, it is. It steadily and slowly diminishes and lessens. And his burden of prophecy is given to another. His mantle in that great story of the chariot of fire and the whirlwind happens. But Elijah is not ended. It's almost as if he's resurrected and given new life in this moment. Being a servant of God is never an easy road for us to travel. Often it means pushing back against the easy paths that exist in our world. It's honestly hard, and it's been especially hard in this last year, hasn't it? It's been a hard, hard year. The more and more people I talk to, the more and more I know that we are collectively burning out. Too many of us are at that point where the mantra of Dory from Finding Nemo doesn't work anymore. Just keep going, just keep going, just keep going doesn't work for us anymore. We are tired and in need of relief. And so many of us are sitting under the broom tree. That's the beauty, isn't it? As we sit there. Because as sure as we are there, God will come to us, will be with us, will give us food for the journey. 40 days and 40 nights to walk towards a destination. The 40 days and 40 nights of rest. Elijah wanted death. Instead of death, he got food, a meeting and journey to collect himself, gather his thoughts. He didn't get what he wanted, but got all that he needed. No matter how bad life gets, no matter how bad life is, how often is it that God gives us just what we need for the journey ahead? The reality is we can't carry one another's burdens, but we can help one another as we traverse and navigate the journey ahead. The challenge, brothers and sisters, is how we can walk along together. How we can give, not what one of us wants, but what all of us need. That's the challenge for all of us. May we find that way to give food for the journey to others and find grace for ourselves. Amen. Brothers and sisters, since the offering will be dropped